try to save no more areas on the observation deck of one of the other clubs. The area is on top of the World Trade Center when it was standing, but I wouldn't stand in for more than 5 minutes. But we're talking about humongous amounts of power. That's the free power that the cell site has. Also, most people don't realize that a cell site transmitter, receiver setup can usually only service about 10 users at a time. It is TDMA, it is other forms, but generally one transmission and receive site generally handles 10 customers. So you need some saturation. And of course, as you say, the more sites you have, less power things are going to operate, which includes the cell site output and the user's output. You know, there was a time we didn't have cell phones and we somehow or other managed to survive, but, you know, as technology comes and changes lives, it also changes society, and that's what we're facing here. And that's why all these fears, which are many of them, as you point out, are politically motivated, is something that we really have to be careful about. So, you know, we have to be careful about when we get up on our soapbox and present the facts as they truly are without attaching ourselves to some pecuniary interest. And this is a big one. So, you know, the politicians have their interests at heart, and the cell phone companies have their interests at heart. For example, like Verizon wants to be a purely wireless company. They're trying to divest themselves of all their wireline services. That's how badly that they want to go this way because the profit margin is so very high. K2RW, K2RW.
N2APG. N2APG recognized, Dave. You brought up some good points, Eric. I got to make it clear that I do not work for any cell site, cell phone company. I never have. I've never had a client where I've never worked as a consultant for a cell phone company. I've got friends who work for cell phone companies. I'm so hot under the collar because I see such a huge misunderstanding between the physics of the real situation, the misunderstanding of radio. I'm heavily involved and I'm emotionally involved with radio and wireless equipment. It is a tremendous boon to mankind, in my opinion. To take something that potentially is so tremendously beneficial, it can save so many lives, it can provide so much convenience, it's got the slight disadvantage, it's got the slight disadvantage of being so attractive that it becomes habitual and in some cases addictive. There are people who are sending 100 text messages every single day. There are people who spend tremendous number of hours using that piece of equipment. And so what that's doing to their life in some cases is a little bit excessive. That's the only real disadvantage I know of this equipment. But other than that, it's providing a tremendous amount of convenience, information, safety, pleasure, and whatever. The benefit of cell phones far outweighs the disadvantages. And to take the technology itself, the wireless radio technology, and convert it into something that is bad, and to convert it into something that is evil, and something that should be avoided, and something that should be kept 1,500 feet away from all human beings, is absolutely crazy. Thorough misunderstanding of the technology. In the case of Bayville, yes, there's some very sad situations of faculty and students in the school that's alongside of the Bayville Water Tower, which contains radio equipment for police, fire, and cell phones. And there were people in that school, students and faculty, who became ill with cancer and other illnesses. The townspeople are completely forgetting about the fact that a significant number of the wells in the town had to be closed down because of toxic chemicals in those wells. And there are other health hazards in the town. To blame it on the radio signal across the street, 200 feet, 300 feet away, 150 feet higher, on top of a water tower, with those antennas aimed at the horizon, to blame it on them is very circumstantial, very provincial, short-sighted, overly convenient. Yes, I know that the people in the village of Bayville are strongly against all radio antennas. They want all antennas removed from their town. And they're trying fervently to do it with three simultaneous lawsuits that have been running for close to 3 years. And for all I know, they're going to go for three more years. It is my prediction that essentially nothing desirable to those residents will take place because of those lawsuits. A lot of mental anguish and a lot of money is going to be spent, and it is my belief that essentially nothing will change because there are county laws, there are state laws, and there are federal laws saying you cannot do that in the 21st century. If you really want to remove your body from all radio signals, the only choice you have is to live with the Amish and Mennonite people who have essentially no technology in their lives. They live a very agrarian life, and they'll welcome you with open arms as long as you follow their rules. But in the 21st century, you cannot do that. I had relatives that live in that town. They're very sincere people who really are of the belief they are protecting their children. They will not turn on a cell phone when the child is in the house. They will not turn on the laptop computer and use the plug-in wireless LAN card when the child is in the house. The amount of signal from each of those sources, and they won't use a microwave oven, the signal from each of those sources is way below flea power. The amount of heating of the bodies involved, of their children and of themselves, is approximately 1 millionth of what would happen if the cell site was directly next door to them. I got it backwards, but you know what I mean. It's a 30-watt light bulb. Should all of your children in the house be protected from the heat from a 30-watt light bulb? That's if you were directly next door to the cell site. So the physics of the misunderstanding of the technology is what bothers me. These are educated people, reasonably affluent, educated people. Somehow the education in this area didn't get through, or they weren't exposed to it. And therefore, because of strong misunderstanding, they are living under an awful lot of duress that's unwarranted, unreasonable. It's an education problem. And if I go back and visit my relatives, if they let me do that 3 years from now, the situation will be the same. That's an awful waste of a lifetime as I see it. Paul, KC2, OOA, you're...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Paul, you're the next person on the list. Wait 2 seconds beyond the beep and tell us your comments on this, Paul. KC2-OOA, K2-RIW, my name is Dick.
KC2-RIW, KC2-OOA, Paul. And I wanted to touch on several points, but the first being, since you touched on the Amish, one of the media groups I work for actually has hours out that way, and we pay a substantial stipend to the Amish communities to have our radio towers on their property. Ironically, a lot of our structures also have cell sites. So our rules are that it has to be 50 feet spaced on a tower, higher or lower, from the other cell site. Some regulations coming into play are forcing the cell companies to flex their cellular panels. So now you have to think of two or three major companies spaced 50 feet apart, and one or two of the panels actually has two services on that set of panels. So that 30-watt light bulb just went up to 120 watts. Dick?
I've got a whole lot of 100-watt light bulbs in my house. Boy, I better be shaking in my boots from all of that thermal energy entering my body from all of those light bulbs. What you're telling me, Paul, is that even the people who go to live with the Amish and Mennonites are not going to get away from this problem because the cell sites are already there. Wow. What irony. Well, by a million to one, the real source of radio signal that enters your body is the cell phone against your head when it's operating. And because the Amish and Mennonite are not using a cell phone, they are not getting the major, major source of radiation, the major source of thermal energy into their body, the cell phone itself. And the cell site, the fact that it's there, gives them a very nice cash flow. And from my point of view, technologically speaking, another beautiful piece of hardware on their horizon. To me, a properly installed cell site is a thing of beauty. Of course, people will say, what in the world is this guy smoking? Back in the days when television was first becoming popular, around 1948 or so, and people put television aerials on the roof of their house, to me, that was a pretty object, and it did fantastic things. That picture that came through the air and appeared on that cathode ray tube in your living room was a beautiful thing. And you watched Uncle Milty at 8 o'clock on Tuesday nights, and boy, was that fun. Let me drop. And one of the pieces of hardware that enabled that to happen was that beautiful-looking thing called a double conical antenna strapped to the chimney of your house. Did a beautiful job. To me, that was a thing of beauty, modern-day technology. To a person with the right kind of calibration to his eyes, a properly installed cell site gives such fantastic capability to use the equipment and save lives and create good communication and good intelligence and information flow. It could be viewed as a thing of beauty. It's a modern piece of hardware. We don't see those telephone poles anymore. It's not modern, but it's been around for, what, 50 years or more. They do a good thing. They bring the power to your house. They bring your telephone lines to your house. They bring the cable television signals to your house. Although they're the most dangerous thing in the world as far as automobile accidents are concerned, the risk-benefit ratio is very desirable, and we're going to continue to use them. We can talk about putting all of our wiring below ground, and maybe it looks prettier, and certain European countries have forced that to take place. Unfortunately, below ground wiring has lower reliability and three times the cost. Obviously, we're not going to do it in general. But we don't even see those anymore. And once we get over this wave of paranoia about misunderstanding radio energy, we're going to stop eventually worrying about the view of cell site antennas. And maybe we should hire better tree experts to make them look like better trees and find better ways of hiding them. Aesthetically, I can go along with that. But to try to avoid them and put them 1,500 feet away because you think there is a biohazard, which you are afraid to say, but that's the real reason you're forcing that distance, is again crazy. Bernie, K2YO. You probably got some opinions on this. Maybe you can calm me down.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
You got it, Bernie. K2LIW.
Good evening, Dick, in the net. Couple of thoughts, Dick. We said back in the whole Bayville mess that we needed to have a good fight and that we need a court situation for this, and maybe this is it. Instead, I believe, is the largest, at least the largest populous area that that has passed a law like this. So maybe this will get it out in the open, get it into the courts quicker. I would like to call your attention to Mount Vernon, New York. Just recently there was a federal injunction against Mount Vernon's law against cell phone antennas that the federal court stepped in and stayed the law and said that it was inappropriate. A couple of other thoughts. First off, how many new cell phone towers do we really need in Hempstead? This may be a paper tiger. Is there really a need for more towers in the town? I don't know. That's just a thought. Also, the cell phone companies are just going to pass this on in cost to consumers, and we may actually see the cell phone companies strike back in the media, specifically saying we have this wonderful service on Long Island, but not to people in Hempstead. Who knows? We may actually see that.
KC2RFN, I think it is. Yeah, Alan, I guess that is. I'll get to you right after Dave and after I finish talking to Bernie. Yeah, I'm reading right now that the Metro PCS won its federal case against the city of Mount Vernon, which also has a strict cell phone tower ordinance drafted by the same person, Mr. Comey, C-O-M-I, who drafted the one for Hempstead Town. And he's the so-called expert from Florida that has been helping many towns write these sets of rules that are unenforceable. The federal court said that the denial of the antenna was not based on substantial evidence. The judge also struck down part of the town's ordinance charging $12,000 in fees. So Mount Vernon is a beautiful case of a similar set of rules that were not successful. Hempstead cannot be successful with this. It's a good-sounding effort on paper. I think the people involved believe that they were doing the right thing. I am convinced that they were only partially informed about the technology, and they were thoroughly misinformed about what they believe to be a health hazard. There is no health hazard, not from the cell site itself. If you want to attack a health hazard, then attack the thing that's 1 million times stronger, the cell phone itself. And by the way, you can go to a website. Let me drop it. There is a website that lists in order of the specific absorption rate, the amount of radio thermal energy that will be applied to your body when you use a cell phone. There is a cell site that lists approximately 500 model numbers of cell phone, and they start off at something like 0.3 watts per kilogram all the way up to 1.55. And so if you want to, you can buy a cell phone that is much lower in specific absorption rate, the amount of thermal energy it puts into your body. You can buy one that's lower if you want to. How did the manufacturer do that? You'd like to think he's got some kind of a fancy antenna that aims all the energy away from your body. No way in hell. That antenna is so small, it is effectively an omnidirectional antenna. The only way you can lower the power into the human being is to lower the power out of the cell phone. You can buy one with low number if you want to. You're buying a weak cell phone. It's going to have decreased range. You're going to have more dropped calls. That's the choice. Or if you want to, you can probably, in some of the cell phones, you can program it so you tell the machine and one of its subroutines, don't go above 0.3 watts of output. There's probably a way of doing that. So you can buy a low-power cell phone if you want to, if you really think there's a biohazard, a health hazard. But the cell site is not it. Dave is the next person on the list. Go ahead, Dave. N2APG.
K2YO.
And Bernie will go after that. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, good evening, Dave. N2APG, Dave in Massapequa. First of all, congratulations on your award. You do a fantastic job on the net. And just this education with the cell phone stuff, I find immensely rewarding, and thank you. It's terrific. To have somebody that understands it all and can explain it is just a rare combination. You do a great job on that. And I have a cell phone question for you.
I'm ready for your cell phone question, Dave.
And before I ask you the cell phone question, I wonder if Kate Murray and the political people in the town of Hempstead and such, if they had a scanner and they would listen to the TechNet and be able to take advantage of the education that we all get every week, especially on the cell phone stuff, I wonder if that would have any bearing on, you know, what goes on with all the legal stuff. The cell phone question, I have a couple of old Motorola bag phones. You know, the old 3-watt jobbies. First question, would they still work for calling 911? I think the answer is yes. And the second question, are they good for anything else? Are people using them for any neat stuff that we don't know about?
I don't know. The bag phone. You've got a beautiful piece of history there. It's an antique. Would it still work on 911? I'm not positive. I mean, the way 911, it has to be retro-productive, so to speak, goes back some number of generations, but how far do you take that? I mean, take, for instance, a person who's got a modern-day recording of something on a Blu-ray or a DVD disc, and he asked the question, can I buy a computer today that will read a 8-inch floppy? No way. Can I buy a computer today that will read a 5 1/4 floppy? No way. I mean, how far back do you go? So do you go all the way back to the bag phone in the capability of the 911 call? We're going to have to find out from somebody else who knows that. I don't. I'm a little worried. But you've got an interesting antique. Hang on to it. The next person on the list was Dave, and after that's going to be Bernie. Dave, correction, Alan. KC2RFN, I think you just signed in. Go ahead with your further questions or comments, Alan. K2RIW in the second end.
KC2RFN. Yeah, I was just thinking this lack of education on the part of the public, which which seems to only be getting worse and more insidious, not only prevents the application of good science, as in the case of cell phone towers and the proliferation, but it also seems to support pseudoscience. And you may have heard of magnetherapy for treating you name it. This ridiculous bracelet thing they're selling on TV now, where they walk into a mall and pull on somebody's arm and they're pulled off balance, and they put on the Wonder bracelet and they're not off balance anymore. Of course, the fact that they're ready to be pulled off balance doesn't seem to play any role in this. It seems to go right by the public's eyes. And then there's these laser combs for hair growth. And that one really annoys me, because it's basically a laser pointer. They're pointing onto people's heads. And when I tell them that once the laser strikes the very, very first portion of the surface of the skin, the laser disperses, and now you're really just looking at a red monochromatic light, which has absolutely no properties for affecting the physiology of the skin, much less causing hair to grow, infuriates me. So many people are spending $500, $600, $700, in some cases thousands of dollars, on this kind of pseudoscience. And they defend it to the hilt. It's remarkable. I have a YouTube video up that shows laser cannot even get through tissue paper as laser, and yet people still fight it to the hilt, and they claim I have some sort of monetary reason for trying to dispel the myth. And I learned you cannot stop people from believing what they want to believe. Once they have it in their minds, it's almost impossible to change it. And unfortunately, many of these people seek political office. Back to you,
Dick. What you're saying, Alan, is that subjectivity is very easy to fall into a trap of believing your own stuff. To truly be objective is very difficult. You could say that anybody doing scientific research of any kind has got an uphill battle to make sure that he's not reading into the data. Whenever a scientist makes measurements and throws out what he thinks is an outlier in the data set, he's creating a huge problem, because the smarter person who came along later and realized the outlier data was really telling you something of value. As long as the data was gathered with reasonably well calibrated test equipment in a reasonably objective manner, there is no bad data. It's all data. It's all part of the mix. And you, as a so-called scientist, have to try to figure out what is the message hidden in all that data. You can't throw out anything. But to come to the conclusion that a laser aimed at your head is going to make it grow hair, it's a nice-sounding theory. What's it based on? Was there ever a double-blind test of any kind where half of the group was exposed to it and half of the group was not, and you compare the results? Without something like that, a double-blind test, you really don't know. And it's very easy to become provincial and subjective and non-objective. Very, very easy. A man alone with his own thoughts is in bad company, as a famous French saying. It really takes a compendium of opinions on any unknown area with some serious research to find out what's really going on. A good, solid ham radio operator can easily come to the conclusion that
repeater, timeout, repeater, timeout, cancel.
Can easily come to the conclusion the ionosphere is going to do such and such when I do so and so, and that I'm going to affect the ionosphere by doing something. You can believe that if you want to. Proving it's going to be a little bit difficult. Mother Nature is a little bit nasty. She doesn't care that much about us in some cases. And so we got to work real hard to figure out what the real message is. And it's a matter of education. There are primitive tribes in every continent in the world that believed some really crazy things for many, many generations. That doesn't make it right. And sometimes the belief has a certain kind of benefit for that particular society. But with good education, you find out that the story is a lot more complicated. There's a lot more to it than first meets the eye. How do you convince somebody that they need more education? They first have to admit there's a problem, and that's very, very difficult. If you've got any kind of pride, you don't want to say, hey, I lack knowledge in this area. There are very few people who are able to say that. But we all grow up with a essentially blank mind. You got to work at educating yourself. It's not easy. But Bernie knows how to do it, and he's going to tell us how. KC2OOA, I heard you on the input, but you're not coming through the machine right now. But Bernie was the next person who signed in. K2IO, K2RIW. Go ahead, Bernie.
No, sorry, no magic answers tonight. Actually, Dick, I just wanted to, it was a fill for the, when we spoke a few moments ago, you asked the question, do they understand? I'm loosely paraphrasing. The answer is no. If you Google a lady named Jody Turk Goldberg, she is the president of an organization called Moms of Merrick. And they're the people that were lobbying Murray and the town of Hempstead to institute this. She is quoted as saying, it's easy for people to say they want better cell phone service, said Turk Goldberg. Every single mom we have spoken to uses cell phones. They all have good service. The question is, how many towers do we need? They have invaded us with tons of towers. They're all over the place. We just don't want our children exposed. There's two critical points to this quote, and you'll find it all over the Internet. Number one, they're saying that while their moms are concerned about overexposure, they're all using cell phones in the same car with their child, next to their child, et cetera, et cetera. So there's the double standard. But number two, if you look at all of Ms. Turk Goldberg's quotes, she is always coming back to exposure issues, which the federal government has said cannot be used. So it, there's very interesting quotes, but I also think it's very interesting that she asked the question, how many towers do we need? Well, that's a pretty simple answer. We've answered that on the TechNet already. Each tower serves somewhere between 10 and 24 users. How many users in your community do you want to be able to talk at one time?
Bernie, you got suddenly cut off. Did you get a chance to finish your statement?
Yeah, sorry about that. Echoing just threw me off. I lost my data connection. But yeah, I got the main point across. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I agree with you. Exposure and biohazard and health effects really is the bottom line of what they're worried about because of the word radiation. So if I know if I go to Moms of Merrick, Jody Kirk, Goldberg, I'll see some very subjective data, I believe is what I'm going to see. And if you want to see an even more subjective website, go to BRACT, stands for Bavel Residents Against Cell Towers. My goodness. They had chosen every single article on planet Earth that is on one side of the issue and not one single article on the other side of the issue. They started off with a preconceived notion that exposure is it that has created the health problems of the students in that particular school in Babel. Their mind is made up. Their effort is a sincere one. My friends and relatives in that town are really making a good, strong effort to protect their children. They want their children to grow up strong and healthy and not suffer any disadvantages. That's their motive. But they have, from my point of view, closed their mind to the benefit-to-cost ratio of modern technology and wireless products in particular. To try to force police, fire, ambulance, and cell phones to try to force every one of those antennas to be put in some other place. Great-sounding words. There is no other place. They live in a very low community. but every other town is over the hill where there would be no coverage. As it is now, law enforcement in the town has only partial coverage, an amount of coverage that's missing that in some people...
Repeater, time out, cancel.
There's an amount of police coverage for the radio system in the town that in some people's minds is already dangerous. And to take those few antennas that are giving that partial coverage and to try to remove them from the town. There's only one high spot in the town, the radio tower, the water tower. It's on the highest hill, and it's the highest structure in the town. It's the only place. It's nice to say located somewhere else. No matter where you want to locate it in the town, somebody's going to say, not in my backyard. And to locate it in some other town means that you don't care about what you believe to be the health issue of the people in that other town, and you're going to take the coverage you've got in your town, in your village, and decrease it by some significant amount because you're moving the antennas further away. You can't do that. The county won't allow it. The town fathers, the mayor of the town, Mayor Siegel, understands this, but the residents do not. There is a charismatic person in that town that has whipped up those residents into an extremely strong set of beliefs. You have to either profess those exact same set of beliefs when you're in that town, or you will be shunned. They will not do business with you. They will not even talk to you. Their feeling is that strong. They realize they're fighting an uphill battle, and they're circling the wagons. They've been circling the wagons for 3 years. Unfortunately, it's going to go on for a lot longer. I wonder how long Hempstead's going to be circling the wagons. It can't work. It can't work permanently. It's just a matter of time before the situation that occurred in Mount Vernon happens again in Hempstead. And to answer an earlier question, let me drop. Can a cell phone company attempt to do educating? Boy, that's a tough one. All of their legal beagles will tell them, don't touch it. You'll be considered subjective. You'll expose yourself to possible other lawsuits. Because it is the town, it is the company making the financial benefit of the cell sites, attempting to give the education, a high percentage of that population will say, I'm not going to listen to it. That's not objective information. No matter how they present it, no matter how traceable to the Bureau, it is my belief that a high percentage of the people subjected to the new ordinances will not believe it. So where's the real education going to come from? Us. This is a challenge that we have to pick up. We are the radio people of this island. We are the people with the exposure, the knowledge, the experience of how wireless equipment works and how safe it is. What percentage of us have documented health hazards because of the radio equipment we use? Essentially none of us. We've also discussed in the past on the TechNet what is required to get yourself above the threshold of alarm of the American National Standard Institute standard for biohazard. To exceed 1 milliwatt per square centimeter or to exceed 1.6 watts per kilogram, you've got to do a whole series of really dumb things. If I put my 1,000 watt transmitter on 432 megacycle into a simple corner reflector antenna, and I stand 2 feet in front of that antenna, key down for 6 solid minutes, yes, I've exceeded the numbers. But I've made 3 or 4 errors in a row to do that. Nobody in his right mind would do that combination. A kilowatt of energy into your 80-meter antenna that's strung directly over your house is safe as all hell. It's spreading that energy across 132 feet of wire. And 80 meters is a frequency where the vast majority of it passes right through you with no effect. It doesn't get absorbed. It's the 30 to 300 megacycle region where the body starts absorbing a substantial amount of it. So very few of the things we do cross the threshold of being alarming radio-wise. We know that. We've been there. We've done that, so to speak, mentally speaking. By some means, we have to very slowly educate the residents of Long Island that the thing that they're so far against, it's not their enemy, it's their friend. They're turning their back on the best piece of technology that has come down the pike in the last 20 years. It may be arguably the most important piece of technology that has entered American culture in the last 20 years, and we're running away from it. What's wrong with that picture? Anybody have any further questions or comments? KQLIW in the TechNet.
It's TTT.
KC2-OOA.
Now I hear you, Paul. TTT was first. Go ahead, Gordon.
Yeah, good morning, Dick and all. Or it's not good morning, it's good evening still. Sorry. I think the terms of disqualification that you assigned to the wireless system providers, which I'll, call, and that could be cellular, it could be any number of other things as well, are also assignable by the public to the radio amateur. They view that we have a vested interest in being being made right, and they don't want to hear about, you know, our safety or our safety experience. Or they'll suggest it's anecdotal because it's not codified, collated in a specific, you know, way by those who are proponents of the arguments that you suggest. My favorite one is my town has cell sites that have to be on borough property, quote unquote. The borough, I won't say which borough, but anyway, you can look it up. Anyway, bottom line is that people got upset with this, with the cellular business, when it was across the street, a very long block, on a private business, and the town said you can't do it because you're a private business. You cannot put a cell antenna on your office building, even if it's unobtrusive and not even sticking out or anything. And then they clamored that it was, you know, be unhealthy for the students of a school, you know, a very long block across the street. Several years passed, and magically one cell tower went up on a local firehouse, such that if the very short tower fell across a very short or a very narrow street, it would fall onto the high school, but that was okay. No one said a whisper. The other one was that we have a railroad through here, and courtesy of the Federal Railway Act, a local wireless provider went to the local railway and put a tower up on the right of way, and basically thumbed the nose at the borough. So, you know, to me, it's hypocritical on the part of the borough, number one, and number two, it's a darn shame for the public because we don't have the coverage we should have, but we have better coverage than most. There are towns where there's just nothing. They don't care. They don't want it in their borough at all. And we have that in New Jersey, usually in more affluent neighborhoods, which I find very amusing. KQRAWW2TT2.
A good set of comments, Gordon. Yes, we amateurs are biased in favor of radio. However, to some degree, every human being is biased. The good thing about the amateur radio bias is there is no cash flow because of that bias. We amateur radio operators, with all of our radio enthusiasm, in theory, we do not earn a dollar or a dime with it. And therefore, our degree of bias is much more limited, and we are lovers of that technology. Whereas when a cell site company makes a presentation, people in the audience can easily say they've got a strong economic motivation for saying what they're saying, and therefore their words can much more easily be tainted. That's what the attitude will be. And so to prove what they're saying is traceable to the National Bureau of Standards becomes much more difficult, much less believable. That's what they're fighting. And as such, for the most part, the cell companies have not decided to enter that arena. I'm reasonably sure that their legal department has told them don't touch it. That when you're forced to give a presentation in front of a zoning board, you say this, this, and this, and say no more. I'm pretty sure that they're given that kind of advice. So for us here to sit and discuss what's the best way to give the needed education to the American public, this arguably is the best piece of technology that has entered every one of our lives in the last 10 or 20 years. To say that it is bad and not good. I mean, I can be against pharmaceuticals because I can say there's all kinds of side effects. Except for the habitualness or the addictiveness of making 100 text messages per day. Except for that kind of addiction, there is no real disadvantage of this technology. Oh, I could say that if I give my teenage daughter a cell phone and she misuses it, she's going to run up a $300 a month bill, and I've got to pay it. That's a disadvantage you can complain about. And whether or not you've got enough control ahead of time by proper education of your offspring before you give them a cell phone or force them to buy it and pay for it with their own money, those are some of the decisions as a family member you have to make. But other than those kind of disadvantages, I know of no side effect of cell phone. Tremendous benefits. A lot of lives have been saved. Tremendous amount of communication takes place. And here we are trying to throw it away at the town and village level. It's really wrong. It's an education problem. By some means, we, the educated, have to bring this information to the uneducated. To have them deny this great technology is dead wrong. For the wrong reasons, a lack of education. We can supply that education. It's not going to be easy. I didn't say that. It's not just a say a couple of sentences to your neighbor and the problem goes away. It's going to take a year or two or more. The longest journey begins with the first step. Wesley recognized, but there's one person ahead of you, and that was Paul. KC2O awake or ready to hit, Paul?
K2RIW, KC2O away. Several things I wanted to touch on. Number one, you cut me off before because I was hoping you'd take it back and I'd hit on another point, which is now long forgotten. Number two, the towers, as far as Hempstead is concerned, that leaves one usable field, which happens to be radio tower property already and part of one of those media groups that has no association with me whatsoever. But that's about one of the only few feasible sites that I see left to thoroughly develop in that town that could be usable. Number two, Bayville. Well, there's a simple solution. They don't want the antennas next to the school, so move the water tower high. Number three, Motorola bag phones. There are several providers in the Midwest, Pennsylvania, Ohio, mostly on U.S. Cellular's jurisdiction, that will be supporting analog Motorola bag phones through the end of 2013. So those bag phones could very well find a good home either with a broadcast company that uses bag phone technology to broadcast in the middle of nowhere, or possibly on eBay to find some second love. KC2OOA, K2RIW.
Good information, Paul, and thank you. Paul, I did not intentionally cut you off earlier. You're in a much better location now. You were dropping out two or three times during each one of your previous transmissions. And one of those long dropouts, I thought you had stopped transmitting. Sorry I cut you off. You're in a better location now, and that problem has gone away. So Dave should be pretty happy about the fact that his bag phone quite possibly will continue to work for at least 911. He should be happy to know that. Okay, let's see what Wesley would like to add to all this. N2XJN, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Interesting. Well, Dick, it's not about me adding, it's not much time left. I know that John has one question that he has unanswered, and he mentioned about that question. And I have just one question for you as well about incremental inductance. And I kind of need this to be answered. Back to you.
Yeah, we had a chance. I'd like to find out your opinion of how well radio is accepted in Europe, because you've had personal experience with that. I'm going to go over to John in a minute. Eric first. Go ahead, Eric.
I just want to point out something, Dick. You talk about education. I mean, the state of education in this country has got real problems. But we're talking about the human being, the human factor, human emotion. We live in a country in which when you put money behind advertising, you can take an untruth and make it a truth. And it's proven daily how gullible people can be. But psychology is one of the most inexacting sciences, and it's all about human beings. And that's why we've come up with the mean, the standard deviation, and a few other mathematical things, where that for everything that's good, okay, for example, if you have a drug that will cure you of, let's say, your cold, some particular disease, and you take a group of 100 people, it's going to work on 80 of those people or 90 of those people. There's going to be 10 people that it doesn't work for. So that kind of thinking, that kind of humanness that's involved in what we're talking about here. So yes, there is a downside to cell phones. There is a negative aspect of it. There is the disorderly social diseases that are created by that. There is the disorderly social disease created by the computer. That's only when you're talking about a human interaction. And don't ever forget that, because you can just say that it's a perfect technology and it's all good. You can take good technologies and make, you know, devices that are good for war, which can be considered evil. So, you know, let's not just blanket, yes, it's a nice thing that it had no problem. K2RWK, Tuesday.
I might have a very strong addiction to PBS World programming, things like Nova and Nature. Anything can be addictive. Everything can be misused. College students will frequently misuse good, clean water by getting themselves into a hazing situation where there's literally a competition as to who can consume the most amount of water in a 20-minute period. And college students have died during those competitions. So you can take the most benign thing in the world and misuse it and make lethality out of it. John, what was your next question? KC2WGB, K2RIW. You got it, John.
KC2WGB. Well, it's not as serious as what we've been discussing. This is important stuff, and Eric is 100% right. Madison Avenue could sell Lycra for bulletproof bras without a doubt, and the people would buy them. But I've got a much simpler question. Let me let it drop. Dick, I wanted your impression. What do you think would happen if we take two inverted L's for supports and suspended two aluminum foil balls from, say, number 40 wire from each one of them? No ambient air movement at all. And we space them, say, 2 inches apart. We place an electrode on each one and supplied it with a voltage sufficient enough to cause an arc. Will the balls move? Why do you think they move? And what do you think the combination of the effect is?
That's a good experiment, John, and I've done it. The way I did it was to start off with my Van de Graaff generator. My Van de Graaff generator has a large spherical object that gets charged to more than 100,000 volts. And I've also got another a similar size sphere that I ground, and I put it side by side, and they each have their support structure, insulated support structure, and I could put them, let me pick a number, 5 inches apart. Then on a string, I support a small bell, a small, completely spherical bell that's got a metal BB inside, if you know those kind of a bell, and I suspend that on a string. when the bell touches the 100 kilovolt charge, the sphere, it picks up a positive charge and immediately gets repelled. It's repelled and it slams over and touches the grounded sphere. And it becomes discharged. And it bounces off of the grounded sphere and gets re-attracted to the charged sphere. And the bottom line is the bell goes back and forth, ding, 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 as long as there's voltage between the two. In the case of your two spheres hanging from two threads, or they could be hanging from two pieces of 40-gauge wire, and the two spheres are charged with opposite polarity, they will attract each other and immediately touch, and a spark will flow between the two. If they're both charged with the same polarity, they will repel each other. And the amount of repulsion, the electrostatic attraction and the electrostatic repulsion is reasonably clearly defined by, why can't I think of the name's law, the guy's law right now. Okay, but there is an equation and a law that will tell you exactly how much force you get between two objects.
Repeater, time out, cancel.
I think it's Coulomb's law, but anyhow, I think it's Coulomb's law, which has got an equation. So if I know the geometry of the two charged objects, the amount of charge that's on them, expressed either as voltage with a known amount of capacitance or a known number of coulombs, but there's various units you can use for quantifying the charge on the two objects. If I know the amount of charge, I know the amount of difference in polarity, and I know the distance, the force between the two, whether it be an attractive force or a repulsive force, is clearly defined. And I think it's called Coulomb's law. So there isn't too much magic or unknown about that particular situation if I didn't misinterpret it, John. KC2WGB, K2RIW in the TechNet.
No, Dick, that was perfect. All right, now I want to turn it 90 degrees. We're going to have an element one above the other. One is going to be fixed, and the charge will be opposite. Now they're attracting. Now when this spark actually flies across those two elements, this is the question of the hammering effect. Will the spark moving cause that upper ball to move up? Is it possible?
Okay. You've got one ball suspended above the other. Let's assume that one is connected to a plastic rod of some kind that's connected to the bench, and by a string or whatever, I'm on a spring scale, I've got the other one suspended in the air, and I've got a known charge between the two, therefore I've got a known attractive force, and I slowly bring them closer together. I notice that the spring scale goes up in magnitude as I bring them closer together, and eventually a spark occurs. And the nature of the spark, it will discharge the charge between the two. Because it is discharging the charge that I put between the two, unless I've got a very low impedance supply of some kind, creating a continuous charge on the two, I've now brought them back to the exact same potential. And if the bottom one was negative 50 kilovolts and the upper one was positive 50 kilovolts, I charge them. And then I've got them in a thoroughly insulated manner. They're being suspended by a string. And as I lower the upper one, I measure the tension on the spring scale, and I see the tension go up as I move them together. At the instant the spark occurs, the charge difference between the two, in my example, goes to zero, and therefore I sense nothing but the weight of the upper one on the spring scale. The electrostatic attraction disappears once the spark occurs. That's if I've got equal and opposite charge on the two. If I did another experiment where the bottom one was charged at, let's say, plus 50 kilovolts, and the top one is charged at plus 100 kilovolts, would they repel or attract? I'm not sure. And after the spark, they would both be brought to 75 kilovolts. I think there would then be a repulsion.
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
I think there would be a repulsion and a net positive charge between the two, and I'm not sure, as you can tell. But as I see it, the main function of the spark is to discharge the majority of the charge difference between the two spheres. The spark itself, does it have an attraction or a repulsion force? Does it have a hammer effect? Well, because the spark has electrons moving in one direction and protons moving in the other direction, there is a mass transfer during the spark. So the hammer effect of the spark, although it's small, it's finite, it's real. I think it's quantifiable. I think it's predictable. There's a bunch of guesses here, as you can tell, John. KC2WGB, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Comment.
Well, Dick, I accept your guesses. Believe me, readily than fact sometimes. Okay, now just think about removing the scale and leaving the string fixed, or the wire fixed, with a space that doesn't change. And now we raise the voltage until we get a breakdown. Do you think that hammer effect would move that ball? That's the continuation of the question.
Is the bottom ball and the top ball both being charged in opposite direction? Is the bottom ball grounded? Is the bottom ball floating and you're putting charge on the upper ball and you increase the charge until you get a spark? Give me a little more description of how you're charging at least one of the spheres and what's happening to the charge on the other one. Because you also are going to be getting the so-called influence effect. And maybe I should describe what the influence effect is, which is the major theory of operation of a Wim Hof machine. Over to you, John.
Dick, the bottom ball is fixed. The upper ball is hanging on the wire. We're going to place a positive and negative, and they're going to be equal. Let's say we'll jump the gap I'm looking at. I need 100,000 volts. So we will have a 100,000 volt spark jumping across that. And I'm interested in the influence on the upper ball being at the lower one is fixed.
Because the spark itself is a mass transfer of electrons in the direction of the positive object and protons in the direction of the negative object. And by the way, you can make an electrostatic fan. You can make a non-moving part fan using concepts like this, using the mass transfer. So yes, I think there's a little bit of a kick action to try to separate the two at the instant of the spark discharge. If you had a strong enough power supply and you were maintaining the spark, I'm not quite sure what would happen. Is your instrumentation sensitive enough to sense the kick? And have you sensed whether or not the kick is upward or downward? It is my guess it's a very gentle kick upward on the upper sphere. Over to you, John, but that's your guess.
Comment.
All right. One more statement. I'm going to use a little laser pen reflected onto a mirror and use that. As it changes, it will change its position on the mirror. And by the way, this is being powered by an impulse generator.
Thank you for visiting Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
If I understand correctly, the upper sphere has got some kind of a small mirror. A laser pen is aimed at that mirror, and then that in turn is reflected onto the wall. And that mirror will sense whether or not the upper sphere moves vertically or twists in any way. And I think you're saying you did see a change in that laser reflection from the wall. And go to the next description on that one, John, go ahead.
Yeah, sort of like a ballistic galvanometer. The ball is a piece of tin foil, and the impulse generator, when it makes its mark, it hits its the correct voltage, will arc over, and the ball seems to move, but I'm confused at why it's moving. Is it because of the collapse of the field or not? And I'm going to try to improve on this experiment before I go too far.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system.
Make it a little more
lengthier
and better to discern actually what's happening.
Hey, you're correct from my point of view in sensing that at least two effects are taking place. You've got tinfoil with a charge difference between it and some other object. electrostatic attraction because of the charge differences taking place. So at the instant of the spark,